Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here, coming back from Beauty and the Beast. And now, here is my Gaston and the flu, and I won't tell which one's which. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Justin, Randy. Justin, how you doing?
I'm fabulous, Dave. Thank you.
Randy?
I'm pretty good, too. Weren't they gay for each other?
Randy, you're the flu.
Cool. I have no idea who that is, but...
He's the little guy.
That's the one that's not Gaston.
All right.
That sings about him all the time.
I'll take it.
Who loves him?
His number one fan. It.
He sings songs about him.
Justin, I am indeed your number one fan.
All right.
And that, of course, makes me Belle.
I'll let you go backstage.
Without a doubt.
I got the old address.
In this scenario, who's the beast? Where's our beast?
We don't need one.
We don't need no stinking beast.
When the sun comes down, we're all a little beastly.
Ooh.
We all got a little beast inside us.
some more than others.
Exactly.
Minotaur, unleash the beast.
Peddling poison to kids. The poison has got juicing.
Oh, man.
I love role models.
I love you.
I love both of you so much.
Almost as much as I love this Electro thing. I don't know what to call it.
It's a collector's edition.
So it's not on Amazon anymore. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 Electro Blu-ray 3D Limited Edition. It's not on Amazon anymore, but I had to check on eBay. There's a buy it now for $40. But just looking at the image, it's haunting, and I'm going to link it to you guys. Because this is like an open version. This isn't like the pretty picture Amazon version. This is...
That's what actually ends up on your doorstep.
Oh my God, what kind of lights you got on this thing?
Yeah, it's like, you know when you go to a restaurant and you see the image up on the menu and it looks beautiful and glorious, and then when you get it on your plate and it's on your tray and you're like, what is this sloppy crap? That is what I'm thinking when I look at this open box version.
This Electro has been left out in the sun, doesn't
it? It does look a little melty.
Where is this cellar?
Somewhere hot.
In the show notes, we'll have to link to the original write-up we did so you can see what we're talking about way back when we talked about it. But it's basically a life-size version of Electro from Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
So great.
And his head pops open, or no, or his neck pops open and stores the discs.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Pez dispenser.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
So if you ever wanted your own life-size Jamie Foxx Pez dispenser, there you go.
Yeah.
Only if every time I open it says, Spider-Man. He's like, what you watching? Is it Spider-Man?
I would love that. That would be fantastic.
That might be a custom job.
Mm-hmm. I'd want to put a little glass sphere around it, like in the Haunted Mansion at the Disneyland, where there's the lady with her head on the table talking.
Inside the crystal ball?
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's got to light up.
Get me a crystal ball Jamie Foxx head. That's on my Christmas list. Make it happen.
So we're clear, you don't want a real Jamie Foxx.
No.
Don't murder Jamie Foxx.
We're not asking fans to commit murders for us yet.
I want the blue.
Put a pin in that.
Yeah, put a pin in that. I want the blue Electro head.
When we ask you to kill someone, we'll let you know, and it won't be Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
Wait until November. We'll see how Justice League turns out. He's got one more try. One more chance.
We've been doing this show for the past 6 years now. All the while planting subliminal messages, creating our own sleeper cell. So all we have to do is whisper the right combination of words, and we activate all of you.
I believe it.
And that word is a German word, so you won't even know.
Scheiße porn.
I can't believe we've been doing it that long. That's nuts.
People have been listening to us yammering all this time.
We are nothing short of yammers.
To be fair, I doubt anybody that started listening to us is still listening to us at this point.
Except for David's mother.
Yeah.
My mom does.
Biggest fan.
Big fan. Anyway, tell me about Beating the Beast. How was it?
It was great. I liked it a lot. I think you guys will enjoy it. It is a little long. The original, I think, is like 87 minutes, somewhere in the mid-80s. This one's 129.
Whoa!
So they do add, and they do add certain things that really do add to the story. You know, the whole romance angle is a little bit longer, so it's a little more believable and a less, you know, Stockholm syndrome bestiality. And they have a nice opening to where instead of just like a narrator saying like, oh, then the beast was a dick to this homeless traveler person and she cursed him. Like, you see, like, you know, him throwing these lavish parties and him being just kind of like a douchebag for like a minute or two. And then you see the actual exchange between the beggar and the prince and the aftermath of it. And there's a couple little twists on the curse that make a little more sense. And I wasn't thrilled with Emma Watson singing, but fortunately, Beauty and the Beast, Belle doesn't sing a ton. There's a lot of singing, like she doesn't sing the Beauty and the Beast song, or there's something there. She sings that a little bit. But for the most part, the people around her are the ones singing, and they all do an amazing job. And yeah, I think it's just kind of a fun little film. I adore the original, and this was just a fun little romp with friends that I know and love. And Luke Evans and Josh Gad as Gaston and LeFlou are the best bit of casting ever. They are perfect for those roles.
I don't know about all that.
they're pretty good. Pretty good, and there's some definite subtext there if you read between the lines. But yeah, I would say it is a B+. And took my kids to see it; they both really liked it. Except there was too much kissing at the end, and by too much I mean there was three kisses.
Oh.
two wanted and one unrequited. So it's a little forceful.
It's a little rapey.
A little rapey, but it's okay. It was girl on guy, and so I think that's acceptable. I don't think there's rules against that. There's no marches against that.
You know, that's such a double standard.
Hey, it's the world we live in, Randy.
I know.
What was that one movie with...
Disclosure.
There you go. I'm glad you knew what I was talking about.
I know you're bothering the rest of our audience who can't read Justin's mind. What?
How beautiful was that right there?
That's pretty good. I don't know what's happening right now.
Michael Douglas gets raped by, like, Demi Moore, yeah.
Gets sexually harassed. I don't think it's actual.
Well, she's in the office, and she's his superior. He's a subordinate, and he's like, hey, what's up? And she's like, do a little dance. She's like, dance, Michael, dance. And he's like, I don't want to dance. And then it gets dicey.
Yeah, it was a Michael Crichton book, actually, before it was a movie, too.
And then the dinosaurs come.
And then the dinosaurs do come. Insert rim shot here.
Yeah. Dinosaur come. No DNA.
I'm pretty proud of myself right there.
Right. You should be. That was cool. All I said was cool. What was that one movie? That was pretty good. I'm impressed.
And Randy's just like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, in this scenario, I'm just the everyman, just as confused as everybody else.
Yep.
We finish each other's sentences.
It's adorable.
But, speaking of happy couples, did you guys see the original ending for Rogue One?
Did I see it, or did I hear about it?
Did you hear about it? Have you seen this?
Did you hear about this? No. Tell me all about it. I'm confused.
Randy, do you know the original ending?
I heard a little bit about it, yeah.
You want to tell us about it?
I'll tell you a little bit about it. Yeah.
Would you like me to tell them about it, Randy?
Go for it.
You seem less sure about yourself than you did 10 minutes ago.
Oh, man.
So spoiler alert for Rogue One, which judging by the box office, everyone's already seen. But if you haven't seen it, we will spoil the shit out of the ending before we talk about what the new ending was and what it could have been. So the ending we saw in the theater, you know, everyone dies. All of the heroes have their heroic deaths, and Jin and Cassian are on the beach as the blast wave from the Death Star super laser comes to kill them, because for some reason they didn't just blow up the actual base itself. They shot off like 2 miles so they could have a blast wave. Don't ask. But originally, when they were penning the script, they didn't believe that Disney would go with killing all of the protagonists of the film. And so they wrote their safety version, which was all of the heroes would escape. You see in a lot of the promotional material that they're actually running away with the data disks. They were going to get onto a ship, and they were going to transmit the plans for the Death Star from their ship to Princess Leia's ship. And at which point, Darth Vader would jump out of hyperspace and he'd blow the shit out of their ship and it would explode. And presumably they would all die. But as Darth Vader's ship would leave to go track down Princess Leia's ship from the beginning of A New Hope, we would see a little escape pod and we would see that they were alive in the escape pod and they could conceivably show up in a future movie or something like that. Nothing that was never shot, you know, nothing. As far as we know, they never shot a single frame of anything where they escaped off of the planet. This was all done in the script phase where almost all the characters were completely different from what they were in the final version. But, Justin, could you see yourself being as satisfied with that ending as you were with the previous ending?
No, I don't think I would have been satisfied at all. It's one of those things where they all had to die. I honestly remember when we first started talking about this, I wanted Jyn Erso to actually join the Empire. I wanted that to be the downfall of the team, was that that while the plans did get out, she and ultimately went a different route. But I'm cool with the ending that we got. I thought it was fantastic. I loved every second of it. So to me, it wouldn't work any other way.
Yeah. Well, let me throw a curveball to you, Randy. How much more impactful would that Darth Vader scene have been if instead of random troopers 1 through 9, if it were our heroes from Rogue One? Do you think that would have been too much? Do you think that?
Yeah, I think it would have been, because the reason why we love it is because Vader is killing. Basically, they're innocent rebel soldiers, but they're faceless rebel soldiers. If we spend 2 hours getting attached to these characters, only to see another character that we love come in and brutally murder them, it's really going to make us... It's going to leave a bad taste in our mouth for the whole movie. It's going to make Vader feel less like a badass, you know, because we just saw this all go down. And then it would just sour the entire experience, I think. So I like where you're going with that. I think it's an interesting idea, but I don't think it would ever... I wouldn't want to actually ever have seen it happen.
That's funny.
Disney may have.
Oh, go ahead.
Nixed that. No, I was just saying, I don't think Disney would allow them to do that. But yeah. What were we gonna say, Justin?
Well,
it's funny.
Only because some people just didn't even connect with any of these characters. So, on some degree, they're just as faceless as the poor rebels that were on that ship. You know, like the pilot, a lot of people didn't, like, I don't remember his name. Here, I love the movie, but I don't remember the pilot's name. Yeah, there you go. And then Chi-Chi and Baze, or whatever the hell their names are.
Baze and Chirrut.
There you go. I don't remember any of their names. And, so, for me, that would have worked. Or if it would have been more like, you know, Jason Voorhees on the planet, if it would have been Jason Voorhees on Dubai, cutting down all these people, that would have worked for me as well. What's the name of the planet? Skiff?
Scarif.
Scarif, that's it. Okay. So that would have been kind of neat too, where he's just cutting them all down that way. But it is cool how the whole movie, we're rooting for this rebellion, and then in all of 2 seconds, when the lightsaber turns on, we're just like, yeah, fuck the rebels, kill them all. I have never turned a 180 so fast in my life. Hot damn, I felt like such a traitor when it was all said and done. But
Dad, you think you were able to do that because you know that it all works out for them? Do you think that because you know that you're able to enjoy it, or are you just is just the animal in you that just wanted, you've been waiting your entire life to see Vader just do what he did.
Yes, I feel like I've waited my entire life to see what, how menacing Vader really was. And I don't think we ever really get that. The only time that we come close is when he is just kind of in front of the stormtroopers in Empire Strikes Back, when he's trying, when he enters the base. When Imperials have entered the base and Darth Vader is just in front. And he doesn't even have his lightsaber drawn. He's just walking like, I own the fucking place. And
do something.
Yeah, that was really cool. But we really don't see that. I mean, even when he has his confrontation with Han, it's Han that pulls out his gun without even thinking and just gets off like three blasts, which is amazing, by the way. So it was really cool to just kind of see that firsthand. So as someone, yeah, as someone that never read the books, barely read any comics, watched Clone Wars, but not really Rebels, the only Darth Vader I know is from the movies. So it was kind of cool to see that.
Speaking of that scene in Empire that you're talking about where Han pops off the shots at him, I always loved how Vader was just able to use his hand to stop the blaster with the bolts. Yeah. But, okay, so this is something that I didn't realize until I was just watching a very illegal, probably shot-in-the-theater version of that end Vader scene from Rogue One that was up on YouTube. And at one point, he actually catches a blaster bolt and then flings it back at one of the rebel soldiers. And I didn't notice that. The times I saw it in the theater, I didn't really pick up on it until I had watched it a couple dozen times on repeat. And holy shit, how badass is that? Now, that's something that we kind of got a view of in The Force Awakens when we see Kylo Ren just kind of stop some blaster fire in midair. But I like seeing Darth Vader wielding that as well. It just makes him even more of a badass.
Mm, that is cool. Yeah,
there's some rad imagery in that Vader. Like, there's a lot of subtle, cool stuff. Like the first time I watched, I didn't notice that when Vader throws the rebel up into the ceiling, and then when he's behind him, without even looking, just like behind him, like just cuts him in half with his lightsaber, and then he like just crushes his fist and he lifts two of them up in the air to choke him, and then the one shoots at him and he catches it, and he's just like holding it for a second, he throws it back, and it's like,
yeah. It's almost like
you're scary.
Yeah, it's like he needed this. Like, he's been cooped up all day and he just needed to let loose. Put the top down, as it were.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I really needed this. I've been so stressed. The Emperor's been on me about this Death Star and is it gonna work and the budget. I just need to unwind.
Yeah, and I like seeing the over the top force powers. Like, you know, the first sense that we ever really got of that was in whatever the hell that video game was.
Force
Unleashed, yeah, where you're bringing down starships and stuff. That was really cool. So any hint of that we get, just to kind of really show the true power of the dark side, as it were, that's exciting stuff. They've been able to translate that pretty well on screen with the holding of the blaster bolts and just the sheer awesome violence that we saw at the end of Rogue One. I'm all for it.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely all for it. And yeah, I agree with you guys. I like the way it ended now, and I think that I do like the idea that Justin was saying of Vader kind of hunting them on Scarif, and like, yeah, one by, like, he kind of reaches them like one by one, and like each of them have like their own individualized altercation with Vader, but ultimately, of course, they all end up deceased.
Like in Predator, that would have been cool too. Where you know how that's this little small platoon, and then before you know it, it's just down to Arnold.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is bad.
They even have their little get to the chopper moment.
Yeah, and Entertainment Weekly, who's the one who got the story about the original ending, they're saying they have confirmation of a Vader scene that was deleted, and they're going to be releasing that, I believe they said, on Wednesday or something like that. So we'll hear about a Vader scene that was supposedly shot and not put in the movie that we'll probably see in some capacity in a later edition of a Blu-ray or something.
And we've probably already seen a snippet from it, from all that Vader stuff that was shown in the marketing material that was cut out.
Yeah. Vader. Oh, no, wrong guy. So, Randy, Rebels. So,
yes.
I guess we could throw a spoiler alert here. Was this the season 3 finale, or is this just...
I believe it is the finale, because it didn't show any kind of scenes for next week or anything. I believe it is the season 3 finale. It's called Twin Sons. We finally got to see the epic rematch between an Alec Guinness-esque Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Darth Maul. Crazy trekking through the desert after having his body bisected so many years ago. Crazy-ass Darth Maul. And it was very final. We got to see one last battle, and it was very quick. Obi-Wan ended it, and as Darth Maul lay dying, he even kind of coddled him for some comfort, and watched the fire fade from his eyes.
But it was actually asked him about the Chosen One.
It was
a really beautiful scene that was surprising coming from Maul.
Yeah, well, I know you haven't really been watching Rebels as much lately, but Maul's been a really interesting character. He has grown to absolutely hate the Sith because...
Sidious killed his brother.
Well, Sidious killed his brother, and he saw how easily he was replaced by Dooku when he fell, and then how quickly Dooku was replaced by Vader, and then he kind of realized that, look, this Vader guy was always meant to be Palpatine's apprentice. I was always just going to be a pawn or expendable. And, you know, add that on top of the fact that later he goes on to kill his brother, Savage Opress. It's just pretty much Maul feels like he's been shit on by the Sith. So even though he doesn't ally himself with the Jedi, he no longer considers himself Sith, and in fact considers himself on a mission of vengeance against the Sith. So when he says at the end, when he's talking to Obi-Wan, if the reason that he's there is because he's protecting the Chosen One, of course he's referring to a young Luke Skywalker. And then he says something to the effect of, he's going to avenge us. I don't think he says finish what we started. I think he says he's going to avenge us. And by us, first, when you first hear that coming out of Darth Maul's mouth, you think, oh shit, is that like a spoiler hint that Luke is going to go bad and he's going to avenge the Sith? No, he's going to avenge the enemies of the Sith, which he does when he kills Palpatine in episode 6.
That's interesting. You interpret that. I went a little deeper with that, almost like Maul knew what Obi-Wan's fate was. And that both Maul and Obi-Wan are both dead men walking because of Darth Vader, and that Luke was going to avenge them.
Interesting.
I have no evidence to back it up. I think of that way because one of my favorite lines from the now defunct Expanded Universe was in that Dark Rendezvous novel, which was the one about Yoda trying to go recruit Dooku back to the light side, and Dooku has a lot of scenes where he's reflecting back to his training with Yoda, because Yoda was Dooku's master, and that he used to always tell him, when you fall, I'll be there to pick you up. And it wasn't until later on in his life he realized that Yoda said when, not if. And so I always really love, like, Force users sometimes that seem to have premonitions of what's going to happen, but it could just be me looking too much into 3 words of dialogue.
Yeah, but that's the fun of it. I mean, it leaves it open to interpretation. So, you know, just like Obi-Wan is fond of saying, from a certain point of view, that's really how you can look at any of this.
Fucking liar.
But no, it was fantastic. And I thought the voice actor who they had doing Obi-Wan did a really good Alec Guinness.
Now, I've been watching season 3 of Rebels because I was an asshole for not watching it earlier. I'm a little sad that Maul never really... I know he can't defeat the Emperor, but I would have liked to have seen him be like
make
a nuisance.
Run for it.
Yeah, try. Be a nuisance, get some form of like small victory against Palpatine, just because Palpatine is such a bag of dicks to him. Mm-hmm. So that was a little sad. That was a little sad that it wasn't really a fight. It was like they lighted the lightsabers, Maul did some twirly-twirly, they charged each other, and like Obi-Wan just fucking got him.
Well, maybe he was thinking more of a long game.
Maul?
Yeah, because, okay, so when they combined, I don't remember what planet it was on, I think it was Dathomir, the Night Sisters
the Night
planet.
Sisters? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where they combined the Jedi holocron with the Sith holocron, and that gave them momentary clairvoyance where they can kind of see whatever image they wanted to, and that is where Maul got the location of Obi-Wan. He saw twin suns, deduced that it was Tatooine. Maybe above and beyond just showing him what he thought maybe was his deepest desire, which was revenge on Obi-Wan. Maybe he realized that, or maybe the Force had a greater purpose for him going out there to Obi-Wan. Maybe it was drawing him more towards Luke. Because realistically, I think once Anakin was damaged in episode 3, he was never going to be able to fully live up to the potential that Sidious or Palpatine had hoped for him. You know?
Right.
He was always going to be flawed. He was always going to have good in him. He was always going to be just damaged to the point where he couldn't be as effective as a hateful young Anakin with all of his limbs, you know? So I think from the beginning, Palpatine was hoping that Luke's offspring would be turned, even when he didn't realize that they had survived. When he found that out again, he was all too eager to offer up Vader and trade him for the younger model, trade him for Luke. So
the new
hotness, of course. So I'm thinking maybe in that momentary vision that Darth Maul had, he saw all these things many steps in advance. You know, he saw all these things happening in the future and was like, how can I get in on this? How can I disrupt Palpatine's plans? Okay, I'll find Kenobi. Kenobi's guarding the offspring of Skywalker. I will kill him. Maybe, I don't know.
Then he goes out like Mace Windu.
Then he goes out like a bitch. Yeah, I'm probably stretching and reading way too much into it. But like I said, that's half the fun of this.
Yeah, no, I totally buy into that. That, you know, I would imagine that Maul, it would be twofold in killing Luke. You know, it would be like fucking up Palpatine's program, and in a way, maybe, you know, drawing Palpatine in. You know,
How great was it at the end of the episode too when Obi-Wan is sitting there looking over the Lars homestead, and you hear an actual recording of the lady that played Aunt Beru from episode 4 calling Luke, and you see him running across. You could tell it's like a kid version of Luke. It's definitely not the older version that we're used to from A New Hope. He's just dashing across the sand going over there. I loved hearing his theme, hearing the voice of Aunt Beru. It just, oh, that tied it together so nicely for me. I love when they are able to kind of tie in or reference original material.
It was a great capper for the series. Do you think they come back for season 4?
It's already been approved for season 4. It's coming back for sure. Yeah.
In its current form, do we know? Is like with Ezra and Kanan and all them?
Absolutely. It might just, maybe there might be a time jump. I wouldn't mind a time jump.
Do you think there will become a point to where Rebels will butt up to Rogue One?
I hope so.
You think that's
I hope so, because there's a direct correlation there. I mean, we see Chopper, we see the Ghost, the ship that they're in, and we see, we hear Hera's name called over the PA in the Misasi Temple.
Right.
Do we see their ship make it out in Rogue One?
We don't, I don't think. We see it flying in like
formation,
some of the big
right?
shots.
Yeah.
And then we see it landed out in front of the temple. We see it like out in the ground. But we don't see it make it out.
Not the
temple on Yavin. Yeah. Yeah. So we know they take place. They, to some degree, are present for at least part of the space battle over Scarif.
Yeah. And we know some of the ships got out.
Barely.
Before they ran into the fucking Star Destroyer.
That's so badass.
I'm like, I don't know if that's how it works, but that's pretty cool.
Now, there are rumors, and they're just rumors, but I will go ahead and say spoiler alert. There are rumors that Benicio Del Toro might be playing an older Ezra Bridger.
In episode 8.
In episode 8, yeah.
Question. Why is it that when the fleet was jumping and they ran into the Star Destroyer was fine, but then the tiny little A-Wing crashes into the Super Mega Ultimate Star Destroyer, and then it falls in space, and then it crashes into the Death Star?
Oh, you're talking about Return of the Jedi? Well, the Executor was dead. Like, it would... Oh. They knocked out the bridge, and so it wasn't operational. And so that's just, and so the gravity of the Death Star just started to pull it down.
Okay. Just because the ship crashed into it? A little tiny A-wing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they destroyed the shield generators, those little spear things.
And that allowed... battery!
Too late! And that's what allowed the little A-wing to be able to crash into the bridge, yeah.
I see.
And it was a very... It was an uncontrolled crash. It was kind of... I would say it was just a happy accident.
And they that happens a lot in Star Wars. Can we argue that that's just the Force, the will
it's
of the Force?
It's the will of the Force. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly
Jesus
what it is.
Tap dancing. That's it's so lame. There's a couple of things that bother me in storytelling, and that is the will of the Force and the amazing hacker skills of some random team member in comic book movies and shows.
Yeah. Anything on the CW is going to have a super hacker.
I swear to God, even back in Smallville days with little Chloe and her little...
iMac.
iMac, yeah. Oh, let me just hack into the school's computer. Let me just hack into the DMV. Let me just do this. And it's... Ugh.
It's like, oh, it's that easy.
Did they even have internet in 2000? Probably.
Says I'm dial-up, mother
but
piece of shit.
Barely. Honestly. What, like, here you can go into any building. It could be some derelict, broken-down piece of shit, and it still just happens to have Wi-Fi. But in 2000...
In 2000, it probably would have been dial-up still. I think DSL had just become a thing in 2000 or 2001, somewhere right around there.
Yeah,
I
had a
school internet.
Yeah, I had a cable modem. I remember that. So I mean, I know I had a cable modem, but my download speeds was like maybe like 3 megabytes or something like that. It wasn't anything even remotely impressive. Oh my god!
She was doing it in school, which I'm sure was not super fast.
She was doing it in his barn. She was straight up hacking into crazy places in the hay. She's
pre Wi-Fi.
Yeah. All lies. Smallville was fake.
Yeah, it was
full of lies.
Well, Randy did. So did Maul and Ezra part amicably? Like, because what wasn't? Maybe I'm just not there yet. But wasn't Ezra kind of?
Well, Ezra should be upset because Maul left him there to die. The whole thing with like the ghosts of the Night Sisters or whatever is. It's like, yeah, they could kind of perform this ritual where they open the holocrons and everything, but there had to be a sacrifice. They had to make a sacrifice for all this to happen. And Maul's like, haha, see ya, kind of leaving Ezra to stay behind as the sacrifice. And Kanan, and I think Sabine ended up coming back and rescuing him. That's when Sabine had the Darksaber, or when she obtained the Darksaber. I think she found it, if I recall, on Dathomir. I'm already a little bit fuzzy because it's a few episodes back. But
right, because she's Rey's mother and Obi-Wan's daughter.
Yeah, so at this point, there's no love for Maul from Ezra. And even though Maul still jokingly in this last episode calls him his apprentice, Ezra's pretty much over him. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a bummer because I was really hoping that he was going to be tempted to the dark side. I really wanted to see, like, the fun young teen character in this fun young teen Star Wars show get turned to the dark side.
Worked really good last time.
And then die.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it would have been cliche by now, but it still would have been fun.
What do you buy into the, do you put any stock at all into the Obi-Wan to Sabine to Rey lineage?
Obi-Wan and Sabine getting it on?
No, Sabine being Obi-Wan's daughter and Rey being Sabine's daughter.
No. Well, okay. There. This is the first I'm hearing of this.
Oh, is it?
So
you should look it up because okay. Obi-Wan had a relation. You know, in the Clone
Wars.
You know,
he did. With the Mandalorian.
With the Mandalorian. Chick. Yeah. Then, you know, that brought us Sabine and then. I don't remember how they connected the dots to The Force Awakens, but there was some, you know, coincidental, you know, tangential, you know, things that they kind of have in common and stuff like that. That it's an interesting theory. You should definitely check it out when you have time.
Yeah,
since you're invested in Rebels.
I'm mulling it over in my head quickly right now, going, I'm liking the way this is going. Tell me more.
tell me more. Like, did he have a car? Like The Matrix? Can we tell you more about The Matrix?
No, I've heard all I need to hear about The Matrix.
Justin, you loved the second and third Matrix movie more.
Yeah.
What would you think of a Matrix? Well, I guess we'll start with this. If there were to be more Matrix movies, would you rather have a hard reboot? Would you rather have a prequel series? Or would you rather have kind of like a soft reboot that could either be like a Force Awakens type thing, to where it can either take place directly after the third one, or it can take place within the original trilogy? Which of those three would you rather have?
I would be okay with a prequel. It would be interesting to see like Morpheus coming to be and things of that nature. The only thing with that is, then that means that the agents are just unstoppable. You know, in the first Matrix movie, you just ran for dear life if you saw an agent, right? But then in the second and third one, everybody was fighting agents, and I didn't really like that so much.
Right, they had the confidence. Maybe the agents got better in the Matrix trilogy. Agents this time.
He said, Keanu even says that outside the meeting. He's like, ooh, upgrades. Like when he's fighting these new agents. So they're even tougher. So how is it they're able to stand a chance against someone before they was just met certain death? Either way, I don't care. That's neither here nor there. I do think if it was a prequel, then the agents should be back to being an unstoppable force. And it would be kind of cool to see maybe the fall of man and trying to rebuild what was lost. I know we kind of get that in the Animatrix. There's that one really dark... I mean, the whole thing's dark, but there's that one where it's actually showing humans being violent towards machines and taking them for granted, and then they rise up and attack them. And a story like that would actually be pretty cool. I mean, it'd be Terminator, but more in the vein of Matrix. I think that'd be pretty neat.
But that's like hundreds of years, so maybe that's well before Morpheus, right?
Right, it is, but at the same time, I'm open to that, too. That's what I was trying to get at. I'm cool with either a Morpheus story or even just the fall of man in general. Terminator 3, where it ends with nuclear missiles kind of flying through the air, and you're just like, well, that kind of sucks, but that's a really cool ending.
Would you be interested in like a Morpheus like mystery where he's trying to find the one, to where he's trying to like put these clues together to find Neo? Would something like that be interesting to you?
I don't think so. I think it would be. I would prefer it end with him believing that there is a one. You know, like him more of a cat and mouse and fighting for survival, and then seeing that the key to survival is finding the one.
Like the end of the movie would be like him discovering the Oracle or something like that, and his like first meeting with the Oracle where she tells him that he's the one who'll find the one.
Yes.
That could be kind of cool.
Something to that nature. And you know, because there's a lot of adventures to be told there. He's a freaking captain of a ship. He had to get there somehow, and I think that would be a pretty good story. A ship that's not in outer space, mind you. Again, that's such a hard concept for me. But yeah.
What about you, Randy? Do you want more Avengers in the Matrix? And B, are you down for prequels, or would you like to see something else?
I genuinely didn't particularly care for two or three. I thought one was great on its own. And I think it even ended well enough to where I don't think we really needed to see any more. But that having been said, in a world where we did get two sequels, I think the most interesting stories would take place before the original movie. So I think a prequel is the way to go. I'm still on the fence as to whether or not it's necessary, but at least they chose to go before and not do a hard reboot or not go afterwards.
All right. I don't know what you guys are talking about. The Matrix ends with Keanu Reeves picking up the phone and then flying off into space, right? That's how it ends.
Pretty much.
That's only one Matrix movie, right?
Pretty much.
I'm Indiana Jones in this franchise.
All right, so you were jokingly saying that I was a fan of 2 and 3. I do think that there is there are some pretty cool moments in those movies. Seeing Neo really flourish with his powers was really cool. The Superman thing that he does, him really being the hero that these people need was just pretty fucking awesome. You know, seeing him fly from one side of the planet to the other was just really cool. And I dug that. And him being able to take on all those Agent Smiths. I mean, even back then, it looked pretty fake. But it was still kind of cool knowing that he could do that. So, it gave humanity a chance. And I like that feeling.
Yeah, I liked all of, like, you know, the Christ allegory, so to speak. All the Neo stuff. I loved everything that he could do. I think that they maybe just tried to get a little too ambitious with the whole Zion stuff. But when I watched 2 and 3, I'm just fast-forwarding to the Neo parts. Like, I'm skipping all of Zion. But, yeah, I mean, the story of the One and of Neo, I think, is solid. And I think it's great. And I think it's an amazing through line and an amazing journey. It's great to see how you would react if a Messiah came to you. Because, I mean, that's exactly what Neo is. He's, like, the Messiah for these people. And so just to see how, like, normal people would interact with him, and they're like waiting for him to get off the elevator so they can just get a glimpse of him because he's their savior. And you know, something like that is incredibly interesting, especially in like today's day and age. You know, we don't have messiahs. You know, we're all non-believing pagans, I guess. But you know, this is a world where it's not a metaphorical messiah. This is someone who actually has the ability to save them. And that's the story that I loved, and I loved seeing how he reacted. He was part of a crew. He had a relationship with his crew. He had a romance with Trinity. I loved seeing that. I liked seeing how he just reacted with people, and I loved the fact that one of my favorite scenes in like the first Matrix is like when he becomes the One, and Tank or Dozer, whichever one survives, just like watching the Matrix. He's like, he is the One. He's like holding the fucking like helicopter and stuff like that. And the music goes, and he just kicked his first agent's ass. And yeah,
I love and, that. And like Smith just couldn't comprehend what was happening. That was pretty cool. And he's like blocking him and not looking and checking his fucking watch and just kind of being cool. Yeah, that was pretty neat. And stopping
and
the bullets.
Jumps into him. Yeah.
When he stops the bullets. It's like, oh, shit.
I'm going to watch the first Matrix tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. But yeah, the Hollywood Reporter is saying that they have a writer's room. Zach Penn is head in the writer's room. They're throwing around a lot of ideas right now, but inside sources are saying they're leaning towards a Morpheus prequel that they'd like to get Michael B. Jordan, who I love in everything. I love Michael B. Jordan to death. He was Creed, for Christ's sake. they want to get him to play a young Morpheus, and that they, at the very least, want the Wachowski siblings' blessing. But it looks like they would be open to allowing them to direct the film as well. They haven't had a great track record as of late, film-wise, but they did do Sense8 for Netflix, which was both critically and commercially really, really accepted. So maybe they can come back and direct it.
It is Speed Racer. That's all that matters.
That's great. I love Speed Racer. I like Cloud Atlas, too.
No, you don't.
Not a popular thing. Jupiter Ascending's not that good. Jupiter Ascending was better on paper, I'm sure, than was in execution. And it should have been better. I had a great cast. Ed Redmayne, Mila Kunis, Channing Tatum. Should have been a better movie. It just wasn't.
Just wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. Just like DC wasn't that good last year.
I don't know, man. I keep looking at the numbers of Suicide Squad, and they sold some tickets.
Yeah, I mean, it made over $850 million. I mean, it was by no means a financial failure. I mean, it was a failure on every other. You know, from a filmmaking standpoint, a critical standpoint, a reception standpoint, from...
It won an Academy Award, Dave.
It did. For once, you can actually say that. It did. It didn't deserve it, but it did. Best makeup. It had a Killer Croc.
Yeah, that's kind of lame.
And do you remember what Killer Croc wanted in exchange for saving the world?
I don't.
He wanted BET.
Oh, that's right.
Grant, you haven't seen it. They all make their Armageddon-style demands for what they want. Oh, you saw Suicide Squad?
Yeah, I haven't seen Batman v Superman.
Oh, I thought you hadn't seen Suicide Squad either. Okay, never mind then. Forgive my assumption then, right?
I forgot he wanted BET.
Yeah, and at the end you see him like in his like little hole watching BET.
That's funny.
It's something, all right. But anyways, DC has decided that since it's had such marvelous success in the arena of film with their critical smashes, you know, Suicide Squad, Batman v Superman, and Man of Steel, that they want to double down and they want to do two movies a year. And we are going to have Aquaman next Christmas. I think it's Christmas Eve is actually the release date it comes out. So they're obviously very high on James Wan, Jason Momoa, and Aquaman. I think that's going to be great. They're going to have that come out in December. But they want to start filming another film ASAP to maybe get something in the, like the later summer of that year. And their two potential ones right now are Suicide Squad 2, the Gotham Sirens movie, which is the Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy, Catwoman, whoever else movie, or their Green Lantern Corps movie that they've been talking about. Any of those stand out as something you'd want to see more than another, Randy? And before you answer, remember, they really want Mel Gibson to direct Suicide Squad 2.
I'm all about Suicide Squad 2. I thought that was fun. I kind of enjoyed the first one, and whether you put Mel Gibson in front of the camera or behind it, that's always an adventure.
It certainly is.
Like digging up his girlfriend in the Rose Garden.
I'm going to bury you. Well, what about you, Justin? Do any of these, of those three choices, does one tickle your fancy a little more than the others?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, a Green Lantern Corps movie could be fun, I guess, but that's such a crazy universe that it would be hard to dumb down and be amazing at the same time. So I probably would have to pass on that. I like the idea of it. I think that there needs to be some hardcore. Maybe there is. I don't know. But I feel like if maybe I was exposed to Green Lantern Corps more of in like a cartoon universe first, like an ongoing series to really get to know it, then it might be a little bit more exciting for me. But I think their best bet would be to do the Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah, and it's an established character. Do you think maybe they are doing some super secret reshoots on Justice League? Do you think that if they introduce a Green Lantern into Justice League and it's a wildly popular character, do you think that would be the way to go? Like maybe introduce him. If he doesn't hit in the movie, then go with Harley Quinn, a character you know has already hit. But if he hits big in Justice League, maybe then make your push to try to get Green Lantern out, get the taste of Ryan Reynolds out of your mouth.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. Maybe that's an interesting point. Maybe it's just they should leave it alone. Like, just give it more time to, as far as Green Lantern goes, just to get the sour grapes out of everybody's mouth. A lot of people had problems with it, so there's no rush whatsoever. They might as well just take their time and do it right. So, I don't know. I have no idea what the reshoots involve, but I don't think the world necessarily needs Green Lantern, at least right now.
So Randy, some of us have been overly critical of DC. I'm not naming names. Some of us have been.
Rhymes with Raven Redmondson.
So I think what we all can agree is that DC has been very reactionary and they seem to be flying by the seat of their pants. Is the decision to try to rush something out to make this arbitrary deadline of two films in a year, do you think that's the right approach for the studio right now that's trying to find their legs and haven't found it?
No, but I think it's DC being true to form. It's falling into the same traps that they have that got them here, you know, rushing into something. Much like a young Luke Skywalker rushing to fight Vader, getting his hand lopped off.
So we need to lop off more hands in the DC universe.
Yeah.
Or what about the idea, Randy, of...
Didn't Aquaman have a hook for a hand?
Yes, he did. He's the perfect Luke Skywalker. What about those, Randy, who say that, you know, you're three movies in, you got a fourth one coming out and a fifth one shot. Why not just wash your hands and just reboot it back from scratch? You're having all these problems with Batman. You're having all these problems with, you know, getting directors for these films and people backing in. Let's all begin. That was an accident. what do you think? Would there be something to be said if DC was like, you know what? We fucked up. This was an experiment. We're starting over. Erase. Let's just reboot this. Do you think that's something that they could possibly do?
I don't think so, because that would mean admitting defeat is really what it comes down to. And that would also be kind of, I think it would devalue the previous movies that they tried to make for their cinematic universe, because just like decanonizing all the expanded universe in Star Wars that we loved so much, that kind of has taken away a lot of the fervor that people had for reading those books, because, well, if it doesn't count anymore, what does it matter? Same thing, if DC reboots right now, movies that just came out last year are all of a sudden, well, it's like, yeah, they're cool, but I'm never going to see this actor portray that character again, or, you know, I'm not going to see where this kind of development for this character is going, because now they've completely rebooted it, so why bother watching these?
That's a good point.
I think that's my argument for comic books these days, is like, in the last 7 years, I feel like we've seen so many reboots with franchises that, to me, it's not worth spending the money on if they're just going to reboot it again.
Yeah, and to use Randy's argument kind of against him, with the expanded universe, yeah, it's definitely disappointing that, you know, all the Legends books, you know, aren't canon and stuff like that. But when they did that, they also, you know, because Lucas never officially canonized the novels, you know, it was always this kind of gray area to where, like, some points it sounded like he said they were official, some points they weren't, some points some were and some weren't, to where by shit-canning all of the Legends canon, they created this new canon, which they have said is officially canon. Like, this stuff officially counts within the movie realm, to where they could maybe take, we had talked, you know, a couple weeks ago about turning the Flash movie into a Flashpoint type scenario that would be kind of like a reboot of the universe. And it maybe didn't necessarily have to be a complete reset. You could still, if you wanted to, you could keep Cavill as Superman, or you could keep Ezra Miller as Flash, since, I mean, really, there's only a couple faces of the franchise as of right now, but that would allow them to recast Batman, because they're clearly having some form of problem with Affleck. I know, obviously, we're not hearing the entire saga because everyone involved is professional. They're not going to be like, eh, this and that. But once Justice League 2 comes out and the Batman comes out, it's hard to see that Ben Affleck will want to continue being Batman. And I think for DC to work, they need their Iron Man, and their Iron Man is Batman. Like, without Iron Man, the Marvel Cinematic Universe wouldn't be a thing. And DC doesn't have their Iron Man yet, and they need to find him quick, because Marvel got lucky and found their Iron Man in their first movie. I think that
when Justice League comes out, maybe they're just playing shit close to their chest, and they want us to see Justice League, and I think we're going to be blown away. I think it's going to be fucking badass. And I think that Batman is going to be your, in quotes, Iron Man. I mean, just watching the trailer, Batman looks like the coolest fucking part of those movies. And not just Batman, but Ben Affleck. He looks and sounds and just everything about him just makes me smile when I watch the trailer. So, I don't know, maybe he will step up and be your, quote-unquote, Iron Man.
Yeah, I would love that. I mean, so far, everything I've seen from Justice League has made me happy. Like, Ezra Miller is the Flash, where he's all excited, and he's like, I'm Bruce Wayne. You say that, like, it should make sense that you're in my place.
Right.
But
we also have Wonder Woman first. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think Wonder Woman's got the benefit and the negative of being disassociated from the main storyline, kind of like how the first Avenger Captain America was, mm-hmm. to where it's a period piece. And so I think it'll get a little leeway. I'm just praying that it's a good movie, because I think there's a lot riding on it. Some expectations fair, some not fair, but I think that it looks good. It doesn't look great, but I think it looks good enough to get your money, I guess.
Yeah, and see, okay, here's that's the interesting thing, right? Is I think a lot of it's almost like this is under a microscope, and that's going to be unfair in a lot of ways. But this is she is the biggest, baddest badass that DC has to offer. That is not Superman or Batman, right? She's right. Wonder Woman is it, right? And if this movie sucks, that's just gonna set us back a long way for superhero movies. And except for Marvel, we have Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. So we'll see how that goes. But I think that Marvel has a, you know, they're gonna be watching that one pretty good to see what works and what doesn't to be able to translate that a little bit better.
In the yeah, and my concern with Wonder Woman is it really comes down to Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Like, if you look at superhero movies on both sides of the fence, they really live and die by the actor that leads the film. You know, Chris Evans as Captain America is both likable. You know, you can relate to him at certain levels because where he started, and he's got charisma and he's funny. You know, obviously, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark in Iron Man is just amazing. You know, you got Chris Hemsworth as Thor, plays goofy and tough, and you feel that he's a strong badass. Even Henry Cavill is Superman. You know, he's got enough to lead that film, and Ben Affleck obviously is Ben Affleck, and he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He's great. It's the one thing I haven't been sold on in the trailers that I'm hoping they're just playing it close to the vest, like you were saying, Justin, that she will blow me away when I see her, but every time I see her on screen talking, it seems either forced or wooden or just, I don't want to say phoned in, that's not the right word, but I know it's part of a larger scene and we're only seeing snippets, but I just haven't been wowed by her performance in the way that I've been wowed by other performances in other trailers. Am I crazy for thinking that? I mean, she wasn't Fast and Furious.
I like her in Fast and Furious.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Name me one thing she does except get a hand on her butt.
She sacrifices herself, falls from a moving car onto the tarmac, saving the man that she loves.
Does she die?
She does.
She does?
Yes, in 6.
She dies in 6?
Yeah, on the runway.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I gotta watch 6 again.
It's at the very end when they're on the, they're trying to board the big plane, and there's the big chase scene on the runway. Her buddy is about to get shot, and she jumps off the car to get a good shot, shoots the dude, saves her man, and then goes tumbling to her death.
Huh. I must have missed that part.
Yeah.
How unfortunate.
Yes. So it was very moving, Dave. And you missed it. You were too busy trying to figure out the tank thing. and the
with Matchbox cars, I believe.
That's right. And spaghetti boxes. And it was magic. Well, what do you think, Randy? Am I being too harsh? It's a superhero movie. It's a comic movie. It'll be fine. They got Chris Pine. He's got charisma enough to carry any movie. Am I just being overly picky and worried? Or am I just mentally setting my expectations low to where I can't be let down like I was for Superman?
Probably.
Well, I think you are overwhelmingly worried, compounded by the fact that you as a person don't like period piece movies. So I think what I'm saying is you're kind of coming into it with a bias already. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an extra red flag for you. I, for one, who usually is one of the more negative voices on this show, I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman. And I think maybe just because I do like that time period, I think it'll be kind of cool. So between you and I, there needs to be kind of the gray area. Maybe that's where Justin falls.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I hate period pieces.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I will see this movie opening day, if not before, at a screening. I am I'm on board with this film. I'm on board with Wonder Woman as the character. I thought she was amazing in her like 3 minutes in Batman v Superman. Like when she entered the fight, it was like, oh, it's going to be okay. Wonder Woman's here. Like that was like one of my first thoughts. Like Batman and Superman can't take this thing. Oh, Wonder Woman's here. It'll be okay. You know, we got like the two most iconic superheroes ever. And, you know, this badass chick walks in. I'm like, oh, Wonder Woman's got this shit. And she did.
Pretty much.
She got her ass kicked and she was getting beat around. She liked it.
Yeah, she got the tussle.
Yeah, and she was like, ooh, I like this.
Wonder Woman's pretty cool. The new Justice League animated movies that have been coming out as of late, she's really mean.
like Justice League Dark and stuff?
Yeah, and Justice League War and all those other ones that come out. She's a bit of a grumpy goose.
Yeah.
I mean, she's badass. She's not like down and out in Beverly Hills. She's more like Raphael of Ninja Turtles. She wants to take the fight to them all the time, and she's a no-nonsense, no-excuse kind of gal.
My favorite Wonder Woman is when she's shacking up with Superman. It's my favorite Wonder Woman.
Yeah, because Superman is the only man on the planet that's good enough for her.
Yeah, he's super. To the name.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a good one. Exactly. It's in the name.
Yeah. You had a fun list, didn't you, Justin?
I did. It was the... What is this? What are the top 10 biggest box office opening weekends of all time? This, of course, is inspired by the success that Beauty and the Beast saw over this last weekend, which was, what, estimated 174 million, I believe?
Yeah, 174.8.
Oh, 0.8. That's important.
Yeah, because it was like 6.65 over Iron Man 3.
Yes. And there you go. So, let's start with number 10. How about that? Oh, what's important to note is that most of these properties belong to Disney. They know what they're doing in the business of show. So, coming at number 10 is The Dark Knight Rises, as in 2012. And that movie made a whopping $160.89 million. That's quite a bit.
The second most disappointing movie on this list.
Right. And also, what's important to note is the number of theaters these movies opened in. In this case, it was over 4,400 theaters was showing this movie. That has a lot to do with how much these movies make, by the way. It's just more accessible to people all over. So it's worth noting. Next is Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, 2016. This was in 4,200 theaters, and it made $166 million. So that's actually $6 more than Dark Knight Rises. Of course, Dark Knight Rises grossed over $1 billion, whereas Batman v Superman topped out at $873 million. That was one of those ones where not a lot of repeat viewers, and once word of mouth got out that it wasn't as cool as everyone thought it and hoped it would be, the numbers just sort of dropped, which is a shame. Next, we have Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, the exciting conclusion to the amazing Harry Potter saga. This was back in 2011, which is also worth noting that is the oldest movie on this list, which is crazy to think about. That was only 6 years ago. But that made $169 million and grossed well over $1 billion. This is $1.34 billion. And those were back-to-back movies. You had Part 1 was in November of 2010, whereas Deathly Hallows Part 2, I think, was in July, right?
Yeah, July 15th.
Yeah, just before Comic-Con. I remember we were talking about it the whole time we were there. Then you have Iron Man 3, David's favorite movie. Gwyneth Paltrow. It's amazing.
I like most of that movie.
Yeah, 174 million.
I don't like that ending. But...
That's incredible. 174 million for a part 3 in a movie. That just goes to show that sequels... I think that some things like these kind of legitimize sequels. You know, a lot of times they're bigger, not necessarily better. in this case, there was a lot going on in 2013. I think Man of Steel came out this year, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty big summer for superheroes. You had Iron Man and you had Superman. That's kind of crazy. Two very different movies.
And you know what's interesting about Iron Man Part 3 making that much money? There is none, and there never will be an Iron Man 4 that franchise was able to walk away from that money. Obviously, he's been in Avengers and Civil War and stuff like that, but a standalone Iron Man 4 would probably be on this list, like without question. The appeal of that character is so much so, but they told their stories, and I guess they knew when to walk away.
Right. I think that's true. Let's see. Also, grossing over $1 billion, and that was also one of the first real successes in China for American cinema and comic book movies. Right? Wasn't that like one of the first big releases in China?
Yeah, and they filmed extra scenes for only the Chinese versions, and they got like the top Chinese actors, like the Chinese George Clooney and stuff like that.
Ooh, that's exciting. So now, what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So six. Now we have number 6, Beauty and the Beast. Just opened this last week, 174.8, as you said. And again, that was in 4,200 theaters. So all of these movies were in over 4,000 theaters, which is huge. But congratulations on the success of that. Obviously, we're not stopping when it comes to animated turn to live action. Disney is, they have found success in that. What was it? Alice in Wonderland back in, that was, I think, in 2010 as well. That was kind of our first real dose of that in recent memory to get the ball rolling. And that was a pretty big commercial success. Obviously, the sequel wasn't, but the first one was.
No.
I know, it was funny because, like, the new Alice in Wonderland came out, and then, like, a day later, it was on Netflix. You're like, oh, that came out. It's sad when that happened. Captain America Civil War, another Marvel movie. This is one of those ones that just brought everyone together. This is an ensemble cast, and that's really what it's going to take. You thought it was going to be the Avengers type of deal where it's going to take an Avengers movie to bring them all together, when that is not the case. Captain America certainly pulled that off. $179 million opening weekend. That is nuts. And then we have Avengers, Age of Ultron, $191 million. Big jump. Of course, that one was pretty... that was panned by critics. No one really gave a shit about Age of Ultron. That was forgettable. I know we were all excited for a new Avengers movie, but when it was all said and done, I think all of us were just kind of like, eh, it's all right.
Yeah, and it was muted as well because it came out in May, and then like 3 or 4 weeks later is when another movie on your list, Jurassic World, came out, and that just kind of became like the talk of the town of how they expected it to make $75 million and then made $208 million. And I remember I remember looking back at the summer just thinking it was like Jurassic World summer, and then realizing, oh shit, I forgot Age of Ultron came out and made almost as much money.
Right.
Didn't Ant-Man come out that same summer too?
Yes, Ant-Man came out in 2016. Later on.
Was it? Yeah. Or was it 2015?
Okay. No, it came out in 2015, but I want to say in August.
August, yeah.
It was in the Guardians of the Galaxy money spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dare say I enjoyed that more than Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it was good. It was great. Number 3, Marvel's The Avengers. So it's 2012. This was where it all was building up to. $207 million opening weekend. And that's when Joss Whedon went from the Buffies and the Fireflies always being a cult favorite to comic book geeks and nerds across the world. He just all of a sudden became the hottest man in Hollywood and the man to go to. $207 million is a big deal.
And yeah, I mean, it came up. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, you know, he's never really, sure, he's directed 100 things and he's written things, but as far as movies go, this was it, man. It's like, I remember when we first found out that he was going to be directing The Avengers, we were like, really? That's kind of a weird choice, but he fucking pulled it off, man. He was a hero with that movie.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of like the history of the box office and you know where it's been, and you know 100 million was always like, you make 100 million, you're like the biggest fucking movie in the world. And I remember Spider-Man 2, or sorry, the first Spider-Man ended up making $102.7 million its opening weekend. And it was like, oh my God, a movie made $100 million. And that was in 2002. And then in 2011, Harry Potter, Death Hallows Part 2, we just talked about, made $169 million. And so that's when we first started talking about like, you know, maybe one day a movie will hit $200 million. And I remember when the Avengers came out, they were tracking that they were hoping it would match Deathly Hallows Part 2, maybe get like 175. And then I remember when the 207 number came out, it was just like, is this the future? Are movies going to start making $200 million?
Yeah.
And I mean, the last 5 years, we've had three of them.
Absolutely. And like, so Joss Whedon, he only directed TV until Serenity, obviously the movie from Firefly. So the only other motion picture that he had directed prior to the Avengers was Serenity, which was a great movie. But then to have your follow-up feature bank $200 million, that's incredible. On opening weekend. That's your phone's ringing off the hook.
Yeah. And he's like, damn it, I'm under contract for Marvel again.
Yeah. And which he ultimately ended up not being too excited about. then you had mentioned Jurassic World 2015. That was pretty much following Age of Ultron, $208 million. And then, of course, Star Wars The Force Awakens at number one, $247 million. Almost $248. It was $247.97. And it's a $2 billion movie. That is just ridiculous.
It's nuts. And you had mentioned the theater counts, you know, the 4,500 theaters and stuff like that. So 1987 is when Titanic came out, and that's kind of when things started to change a little bit. But before that, the undisputed king of the box office was E.T. And E.T. was the first movie to make over $400 million. Eventually, A New Hope, with all its re-releases, passed E.T. E.T. passed the New Hope again. And they kind of flip-flopped for a little bit until 1997. So E.T., which is the all-time box office champ for a lot of people, opened in 1,003 screens. So it opened in a quarter of the screens and still managed to eke out, in 1982 dollars, $400 million domestically. Before worldwide box office was a thing, before movie tickets exploded to the $18 they are today or whatever like that. So I think Justin pointed out that all of these movies are from like a couple years ago, and it's just because the box office has changed. You know, international is huge, theater counts are huge, we have these huge multiplexes. You know, in the 80s, even in like the late 80s when I was a kid, I remember they were just starting to get these multiplexes where they'd have more than two movies. And so for these 1,000 screens to show E.T., E.T. was the number one movie at the box office for like 18 weeks. And nowadays, just the way it is you get like 3 weeks and then you're pretty much out of it. So I think the history of the box office is a very interesting subject. And it's definitely worth looking up like E.T. and A New Hope. And then, like I said, in 97, it all kind of changed when Titanic made $1.6 billion. And you're like, this movie made, there's never going to be a movie to make $1.6 billion again. And of course, Avatar's got like $2.8 billion. So I just thought it was interesting.
Time Machine costs $20 million.
Yeah, Time Machine. Oh, man. You looking forward to Chips?
I saw my very first trailer the other day, and I laughed. I thought it was pretty good.
I like Dax Shepard.
I do, too. His voice cracks me up, dude.
I think that movie looks funny, but it shouldn't be called Chips, because it has absolutely nothing to do with the original show. I think they should just have called it something.
They call Highway Patrol. Yeah,
I mean, sure, the character name is the same, but I mean, that is where the similarity ends.
And the job?
Yeah, the California Barely. Highway Patrol.
I think it's obnoxious.
Dude, I remember watching. Isn't that funny? Like, it's so long ago. This show means nothing to so many people right now. It's just crazy.
I love Michael Pena.
It I think it, don't get me wrong, I think it looks funny, and I would, I'm sure I will enjoy watching it. But as a kid who grew up with the TV series Chips, this is like apples and oranges. It is not fair to call it that when it has nothing to do with it.
Talk about licking buttholes and stuff. What are you doing? I'm dressed for work. Oh, you work for the UPS? It's going to be great.
I don't know about all that.
It's gonna make you laugh.
Michael Dorn was in Chips.
Was he? Was he a bank robber?
No, he was a police.
What? Yeah. He's a Klingon.
Klingons can't be police.
He was Officer Jebediah Turner.
Which I guess is ironic, since I guess Worf is kind of the police officer of the Enterprise.
No.
Chief of Security, after O'Brien left. How's O'Brien going to tell Worf what to do?
I don't know.
But if you're ever bored and you need to YouTube something, Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart were on the Norton Graham show. I don't know if you've seen it. People have been sharing on Facebook all the time. And Patrick Stewart tells the story about him having a fight with his wife about whether his penis was circumcised or not, and going to the doctor for his physical and asking his doctor if he was circumcised, and finding out that his whole life he thought he was circumcised and he's not.
What?
It's just the most bizarre story coming from Patrick Stewart, where he's just got this regal voice, and it's charming. You'll see it.
Yeah.
But anything else, guys? Any fun factoids or shout outs or yabba dabba doos?
Not a goddamn thing for me.
Yabba dabba don'ts, maybe?
Ooh.
All right. Well, cool. Well, thank you for joining us for another fun episode of the Geekly Geeksia Podcast. Make sure that you definitely check out box office numbers, because they're fun and math is cool, and the business side of art is always interesting. And while you're looking at those numbers, listen to another podcast in the Geekly Geeksia Network. You got the revamped, redone, all new, all excellent Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Stephen K. James making their triumphant return, and couldn't be happy about that. And then we got Tyler and Jeff talking about those funny drawn comic books to make you look smarter in front of all your comic book friends. Just the other day, I was talking to them about talking to one of my buddies about like all new, all different Avengers, and they're like, "Oh, you read that book?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, it was Iron Man." He was like, "Oh, took you," and they're like, "Oh, well, you're really smart." And I'm like, "Yeah," but it was really Jeff and Tyler's knowledge that I stole. But yeah, make sure you go to Geekly.com for all of the geek news and reviews, and we will talk to you guys next week.